Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm Will, and I'm here with my two friends, Anna and Ant.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
This week, we're talking about the year 527 BCE. I'd like each of us to give a three-word preview of what we're discussing today. Anna.
My three words are tyranny, but good.
How do you spell but?
I love how there are little twists and journeys in the three words now. Mm-hmm. And
mine is marry for love.
Aww.
Yeah, nuts to all when you read this.
But yeah, dang.
And for me, my three words are built an empire.
Okay.
Could nearly be every week.
Your three words, Ant and Will, sound like the two paths a person can go down in life.
Yeah, yeah.
You can marry for love or you can build an empire, but you can't do both.
Which one would you choose, Anna? Which one would you choose?
Build an empire of men for me to marry.
That's what you're doing right now with the two of us. We're the first two of the empire.
Mm-hmm. Every empire has to have a start.
Okay, this week I'm talking about Cyrus II of Persia.
Woo!
A.K.A. Cyrus the Great.
Not Cyrus the Virus. He is the only appropriate nickname.
Not Cyrus the Virus. Although he was presumably called that.
And riddled.
By other school children.
Really sickly.
Yeah.
So Cyrus ruled Persia for about 30 years and died in about 527 BCE.
Okay.
And I should just come out with it right now and own up straight away here. It's possible that by the time we get to 527 BCE, that Cyrus wasn't technically what you might call alive. but there's some doubt.
Okay.
And he may still have been alive.
According to the very low bar that we have set for the show, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, with the BCE ones, I think
with
there's some
wiggle room.
There is a little bit of wiggle.
And I'm exploiting all of that wiggle room.
Look at you wiggle.
You are wiggling hard.
And his Persian Empire was built by first conquering the Median people who occupied the western and northern part of Iran.
And they were sort of...
average.
That's exactly what I was going to say. But then I was worried that you guys would neg me on that and get into a whole discussion of median versus average.
And later on, he pushed west and conquered the Lydian people.
Ooh, Lydian.
Lydian people who occupied the whole western half of Anatolia.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then he finished the job by conquering the Neo-Babylonians.
Ooh. Who had all taken the red pill.
Yeah, they all had like leather trousers and like sunglasses and spiked hair and dog collars on or whatever.
I don't understand that reference. What is this reference?
I think I've seen a different movie. Oh, it was the Dominatrix I saw.
You've done this before.
I have.
And the Neo-Babylonians were in modern day in the Levant and in southern Iraq and northern Saudi Arabia. So if you imagine all of those territories that he conquered during his 30 years of rule, that is, I mean, it's more or less the whole of the Middle East.
Yeah,
really.
Pretty much. A lot.
And then later on, after he died in maybe 527 BCE, but also maybe before then, Cyrus's son Cambyses the second conquered Egypt and most of North Africa.
Wow.
So they really were like a very conquery family. And that really is like the whole region, really.
That's a lot. Yeah. There's not much more.
That's really all the places.
Yeah. Pretty much.
And lots of figures at this time, the history is a bit flaky because the modern concept of history really didn't exist then.
Until like blogging came along.
Yeah, well, until we started this podcast.
Until we started this podcast, there has been no recorded history. Yeah.
And so as a result, really the entire early history of him was written down and was explored by people who were just trying to tell good stories rather than focus on the accuracy of the history itself.
Also famously like this podcast.
I don't know what you're talking about. And this affects, therefore, how we think about Cyrus, because the earliest histories were written by a guy called Herodotus, who was an ancient Greek historian, or quote, historian, unquote, who lived about 100 years later. And so Herodotus gave us an account of Cyrus's early life as an example that was essentially just a mythological account. So he was trying to make Cyrus seem like a mythological figure and try and make it seem like he had an early upbringing in line with lots of the other mythological figures. And so in this particular account, Herodotus has a guy who has two prophetic dreams in which there's a flood, and then there's a series of fruit-bearing vines emerging from this guy's daughter, which then cover the entire kingdom.
Okay.
This guy just dreaming of his daughter having fruit-bearing vines.
Okay.
Yeah, vines that emerge from her. And then, of course, in any like with all these stories of this time, whenever a guy has a dream and there's something like this happens, it's always like spells bad news for people.
Yep.
And these were interpreted by this guy's advisors as foretelling that his grandson would one day rebel and supplant him as king.
Ooh.
And then...
Wait, Cyrus's grandson?
No, this is
his grandfather.
In the end, this turns out to be Cyrus's
grandfather. Well, I mean, he's reading a lot into the tea leaves there, really, isn't he?
That's like, you know, so really much
into the flowering vine leaves.
Into
I
the
think
flowering
you mean.
Vine leaves. Yeah.
And of course, like all of these things, the poor woman at the heart of the whole thing, Cyrus's mother, is just a sort of a totally inconsequential woman who lacks any agency in the story whatsoever.
Yeah.
And unfortunately. And the account has some thematic similarities with like the prodigal son and Moses and that sort of thing. But basically, it had nothing to do with the probable reality of where Cyrus came from. It was just Herodotus trying to construct some mythological story about the whole thing. And overall, Cyrus's legacy is really the establishment of Persia as a regional superpower. And that lasted for many, many centuries. Arguably, it is still a very major and significant power in the region. Of course it is.
The Persian Empire?
Okay, fine. Not the Persian Empire. But is...
Have I missed something?
Fine. Okay. Reasonable comment.
I know I haven't done any research past the year 2000, but I'm pretty sure.
But the precise history of what happened to him is so contested that, for instance, even his death isn't entirely clear. So according to Herodotus, he was off campaigning in the Kizilkum Desert, which is in modern day Uzbekistan, which I know you know. He was keen to try to nab that land for himself because, frankly...
Who doesn't want a desert?
Who doesn't want an Uzbek desert?
Well, there was just nothing left for him to conquer.
Yeah.
This is just the last bit. So he did what any sensible nobleman of the time did, which was to propose marriage to the local queen, Tamiris, but rather rudely... She rejected him.
Desert wench.
Like a desert wench. And then, even more rudely, she defended her land when he attacked anyway.
That is pretty rude.
Double wench.
And defeated him in battle.
Oh, the elusive triple wench.
I'm starting to really like her.
And I'm a big
What's her
fan.
Name again? Tamiris.
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 Tamiris. And in classic fashion...
Tamiris the virus.
Tamiris the virus and Cyrus.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a match made in heaven.
Do you think that's why she said no?
Yeah, they couldn't have rhyming names.
Yeah.
And in accordance with the way many people acted at the time when they defeated someone during this era, and again, this is all Herodotus's account. After Cyrus's death, she ordered that the body of Cyrus be brought to her, and then she decapitated the body and dipped its head in a vessel of blood, which I don't really understand.
Oh God!
Like, so I guess she just had a pot of blood.
Yeah, his blood or just somebody else's blood?
No, someone else's blood.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, don't understand that whole thing.
Yeah,
seems a bit unnecessary to me. Except that, as I said, because this is all Herodotus' account, probably none of it ever happened anyway.
Well, but... I do know when we come here, we do have a lot of like crisps and dips.
We
so
do.
Next time I might bring some dipping blood.
Vial of blood. Yeah, yeah. You can get that on Ocado now.
Yeah, you can get that.
Yeah, they had a deal this week.
That'll go well with my cellar full of human heads.
God.
And... there is a tomb of Cyrus in the south of modern Iran, which is called, and this is really quite unoriginal, the Tomb of Cyrus.
Yeah.
Very unoriginal.
Yeah.
Easy to find.
And the epitaph on the tomb apparently read at the time, it doesn't read this now, there's nothing on it now, but apparently at the time it read, "O man, whoever you are, and wherever you have come from, for I know you will come, I am Cyrus, who won the Persians their empire. Do not therefore begrudge me this bit of earth that covers my bones."
Oh. Wow, except for my head bones, which are in a vat of blood in Uzbekistan.
Which I find just a very odd epitaph. It's kind of like accusatory.
Yeah.
It's like, I know you're going to come.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
don't
yeah.
have a go at me for...
And don't take away this tomb. Like, yeah. Just don't begrudge me, please.
Like, no one was saying they would.
Well, it's like a humble brag. It's like, listen... I got all of Persia.
Yeah.
I'm just going to take a little square for myself now.
Except for the desolate, barren wastelands of the Uzbek desert.
Yeah.
Which remains forever free.
Yeah. Because Tamiris would only marry for love, of course.
Oh.
Probably. Also, she probably just didn't like him at all. Anyway, that's Cyrus the Great.
Cyrus the Great, conqueror of...
Most
of the world.
Most of, yes.
Most of the world that mattered at the time.
Yeah, that's the guy.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
My hero of today also relies a lot on the stories of Herodotus, who was, you know, just writing a lot of stuff. I am in Athens, and I am talking about, yeah, tyranny, but good. So ancient Athens at this time is an era when political power is held by the aristocracy. And our story today is about a man named Pisistratus, or possibly Pisistratus. I don't know. I don't speak Greek, but I am going to incorporate Pisistratus into my life.
So as, violent
as
the way you say it.
Something to call someone when they're being a real tool. You're being a real Pisistratus right now. Now I'm going to laugh every time I say it. Pisistratus could apparently trace his lineage to Nestor, one of the heroes of the Trojan War. Oh. And this kind of claim to legitimacy from a legendary hero was kind of a prerequisite for being a notable member of the aristocracy. He originally makes a name for himself as a general. He captures a port that allows them to overturn a trade blockage that had led to food shortages for decades. So he's really kind of starting to be beloved by the people. Then he starts to set his sights on more power. And at this time, Athenian society is divided into three political factions. There's the men of the plain, who are the wealthiest because they have farmland.
Yeah, the plain
jets.
The plain, yeah.
The jets. Yeah.
Yeah, they were living that PJ lifestyle. There were the men of the coast who had been economically
lazy,
hamstrung.
Resting on the laurels.
Because of
like coasting.
Yep, exactly. Okay, now see what you can do with this one, smartass. There was the men of the hills.
They lived in the hills.
Lived in the upland areas.
Yes, they lived in the upland areas. They were by far the poorest people, and no one had really bothered to.
No beach holidays there. That's why.
No beach holidays in the hills outside of Athens. You're right. Just heat and goats, probably. Pisistratus very shrewd. What is the shrewd? Wow, he very shrewdly realized that the Men of the Hills could be this formidable power base if only someone would kind of galvanize their support, which he did. He was a community organizer like Barack Obama. He was also a master of pageantry, like the guy who succeeded Barack Obama. One of his first acts, he intentionally wounds himself on the outskirts of town and then rides into the marketplace, claiming that he'd been assaulted by an unknown enemy and asking for the protection of bodyguards, which he gets. And the combination of these bodyguards and the support of the Men of the Hills is enough for him to seize the Acropolis and declare himself tyrant.
What?
Yeah.
That's such a big leap between spraining his ankle.
Yeah.
Is there any burly men in town that can protect me? And then marching and saying, oh yeah, trust me, I've got a bunch of guys in the hills that are going to ruin your day if you don't give me the Acropolis.
Well, listen, burly men were a commodity in Greece. That's why they get all the statues.
That is true.
But an important bit of context is when we hear the word tyrant, we think of what is actually a very modern conception of it as a really despotic ruler ruling with an iron fist, a bad guy. In this era, tyranny just refers to rule by someone who obtained power unconstitutionally. But there could be good tyrants or bad tyrants. They were just judged on how they ruled. And in this case, the Athenians were actually really open to a tyrant because the rivalries amongst the aristocracy were getting really fierce. And so they thought that a single strong ruler was probably a better bet for peace and stability.
Yeah, than all these like posh people.
Yeah, exactly. Fighting, like passive aggressively fighting each other in their planes. It wasn't always smooth sailing for Pisistratus. He is a tyrant three different times. So his first attempt starts in 561 BCE and lasts for 5 years until the plains and the coastal people form an alliance and oust him. He goes into exile. Period two starts 5 years later when that alliance has fallen apart and the leader of the coastal people, who's named Megacles, invites Pisistratus to come back as tyrant on the condition that he marry Megacles' daughter.
Hmm.
And now the
Minicles.
Minicles.
Yep. No, she's a woman. She doesn't have a name.
Of course.
But now the pageantry comes back in. In order to rally the support of the Athenians again, Pisistratus and Megacles find this 6-foot-tall woman to pose as Athena. And they put her in full armor. They put her in a chariot. They send these heralds out ahead of her to announce that Athena herself is bringing Pisistratus back to the Acropolis. Everybody loses their fucking minds and they are so excited and they see her riding in with him next to her on the chariot and they welcome him back with open arms. So the pageantry
works. People know this is just a stunt, right? And they're just enjoying the moment.
No, I think, well, I'm sure some of them did, but I think a lot of them were like, oh my God, it's Athena.
They're like a 4-year-old with a guy in a Father Christmas outfit.
Yeah.
So like his first move in any coming to power is hire burly men or slightly tall women.
Yeah. Create a spectacle, whatever you can
Absolute
do.
Absolute spectacle.
He's showman.
Wow. Interesting.
He could murder someone on Fifth Avenue and still get elected president. Sorry, that's a Trump reference. Unfortunately, his alliance with Megacles falls apart because even though he married the daughter, Minicles, he already has 2 sons from a previous marriage and he doesn't want any more. So he, quote, would not have intercourse with her in the traditional manner.
Intriguing.
I will leave that open to the judgments of history.
I'm very confused. So if any of our audience could write in and please explain to me.
You can write just to Ant on that.
Yeah, just to me. Hit me on Twitter, whatever. You mean they didn't cry or something?
Yes. Megacles is understandably furious, presumably about more than one part of this. So he drives Pisistratus back into exile.
That's an awkward conversation with the father-in-law. If he sits you down, he says, look, I know you're married to the family, but I'm angry with you. Okay, why are you angry? Pop, pop.
You haven't been crying when you've been having sex with my daughter.
So he's in exile for 10 years, but he's always thinking about his return to Athens.
And what else do you do in exile?
You just plot your course back in, right, as all the great men of history have shown us. in 546 BCE, he gets his wish. He lands at Marathon to begin a new advance on Athens. His troops literally catch the Athenian forces napping after lunch, presumably a lunch heavy with wine, and they just roll right over them. And Pisistratus sends his sons out to reassure the Athenians.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
That they don't need to be afraid. And they're like, all right, you can be tyrant again. but this time, his third attempt, it is a success. And he's tyrant for nearly 20 years. And I think on balance, he's a pretty good one. I have a couple of bullet points here about things that he did. He unifies the Attic Peninsula and sets up Athens for preeminence throughout Greece. Hmm. He promotes Athens as a cultural center. He commissions a permanent copying of the Iliad and the Odyssey. He brings back the Pan-Athenaic Games, which was a festival to honor Athena. That included sporting events.
That tall woman that he still that had on retainer.
Yeah, she's just like, yeah, I'll take a festival. Big fan. So sporting events as well as poetry and music competitions. So you would have done well there.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. I would have loved that. Yeah. My unique blend of being tall and poetic.
He reintroduces a focus on growing olives as a cash crop, and he funnels the proceeds to the men of the hills. He's rewarding his power base very good. Shrewdly.
Clever.
Yep. He initiates a series of traveling judges to go around the region and do conflict resolution.
Oh.
What?
Yeah, rather than, so like to send them out into the hills. So if there was a trial, you didn't need to come
in. I thought you meant like X Factor.
Yeah, I was thinking that like, too.
Yeah,
he does traveling judges.
He organizes local X Factor competitions.
And there's like a sad story about this guy that grew up in the hills, penniless with no olives.
You can imagine the montage.
Yeah.
I guess that would be the Chi Factor. Is that X?
Can't remember.
I'm a little, that is either a great joke or a very bad one. But anyway, apparently at one point he himself is charged with murder and he stands in his own defense at one of these traveling judge shows. But the prosecution drops the charges because they're afraid of him, which
of
is
course,
a great
yeah.
way to get away with murder. He shores up infrastructure, upgrades the roads, improves the aqueducts.
Great broadband.
Yeah, great broadband. He installs fiber optic cable everywhere. And just in general, he reorients society around public patronage rather than private. He gives construction jobs to citizens in need. He builds affordable housing in the city center. Mm-hmm. He's like a really kind of a modern politician in 527. In 527, he dies. Probably. It may have been 528. And he's succeeded by his sons, who are also pretty good, but not as great as him. And interestingly, just as a final note here, the classic form of Athenian democracy evolves in response to the rule, to the tyranny of his family, specifically the practice of ostracism, where people would vote to expel a citizen for up to 10 years, which comes about as a defense against individuals who amass too much power or influence. Why, Will, unfortunately, we have an announcement.
You're being ostracized. Oh. Fetch the ostrich. Sorry, I wasn't listening.
It's actually, and I won't go into this, but it's actually, I think it's called ostraco, which is, it was like a piece of pottery, and you broke it, and you used the pieces of the pottery as your tokens in the vote to ostracize, and that's where the word comes from.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
That is very interesting.
Yeah. That's anyway, really, really cool. That's a little bit about Greece and a little about...
And you gave them to the ostrich who counted them.
The ostrich counts them really slowly because it has to bend all the way down with the beak.
One.
To put it into the pile.
Two. Three. Yeah.
And the counting is done by this 6 foot tall woman pretending to be Athena.
Wow, I'm really painting a vivid image of Greece.
Yeah, this was, I mean, Herodotus wrote every word of this. So this, you take it all as fact.
Oh, thank you. Hello, I know everyone was probably expecting Ant to come in here with his section, but a short note from me during the edit. It appears that we have lived up to the high academic standards set during this podcast by collectively not noticing that Ant, in this next section, is talking through a topic not from 527 BCE, but from 527 CE, which is, of course, an entire 1,053 years after the year he's supposed to be focusing on. And it really should have been obvious to us, had we been paying literally any attention at all to the content of what Ant was saying, partly because he mentions Christianity as a historical force during this period. And even given our limited knowledge of history, it should have been fairly clear that Christianity wasn't a thing in 527 BCE. So anyway, I hope you enjoy the section. And I guess at some point in the future, maybe when we do 527 CE as a year, we can come back and force Ants to do one from 1,053 years prior to make up for what he's done. It's entirely his fault. Thanks. Enjoy.
This week, for my portion, Herodotus had nothing to do with it.
Boo!
And it definitely happened in the year 527 BCE.
Okay.
Maybe.
This is Will in the edit. It definitely did not happen in 527 BCE.
But according to lore, legend, and myth, this is the year that Justin the First of Byzantine dies.
Justin.
And I have to set a bit of context. And I know you've got some questions. One, who is Justin? And two, why should you, the listener, care? on the second point, it's a history podcast, so you should care. And on the first one, Justin is a fascinating man in Byzantine, and we're talking about one of the greatest ever stories of self-made men. So this is a very classic tale of rags to riches, and he's very fascinating. To give you some background, Justin was from a family of swineherds in the Balkans. So swineherds, they herded swine. Okay. Maybe they just listened to them. Maybe it's misspelled. Pig listeners of the Balkans.
Justin of the pig listeners. Yep.
But he moved to Constantinople at the heart of the Byzantine Empire as a refugee fleeing a barbarian invasion. He joined the army and he rose through the ranks and got the rank of general under the then emperor Anastasius. Anastasius.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I'll allow it.
And he was appointed by him to be head of the excubitores, which were the elite palace guard.
Ooh.
They were able to excubitorate anything and anywhere they wanted.
Oh, that's where the word excubitorate comes from.
That's exactly where the word excubitorate comes from.
I've always wondered.
Yeah. My very limited knowledge of this period of history tells me that the palace guards were often the people, they're a bit cooey.
Well.
You can't spell excubitorate without coup.
I'm not saying they were very cooey, but they were the only troops that were allowed in the city because the rest of the army weren't trusted to be in the city.
Uh-huh.
And so when Anastasius died, he was the only one there and was able to install himself as a successor.
Huh.
Okay.
It's funny how that happened.
And he was 70 years old when he became...
70.
Oh, 70 nice. Years old.
Wow.
And he was extremely orthodox. He used his power to enforce the orthodox Christian doctrine and it's definitely one of the reasons why orthodoxy became so prominent and so established, because he was able to enforce his religious views.
Justin the Wizened.
In the later years, though, there was trouble a-brewing around him. There are two forces of powers in the region. The Sassanids, which we have encountered before.
Yes. Yeah.
And another group, which we haven't, called the Ostrogoths. Nice. Yeah. Spelled that's O-S-T-R-O, goths.
Those are goths that ride the ostriches.
Yes.
That count.
Well, I think Astrogoths is kind of a better one.
Oh. Shotgun also, band name.
It's a great band name. An earthquake also, a very famous earthquake at the time, just previously had destroyed Antioch. He was starting to go senile as well at the time. The earthquake of Antioch.
And Justin's going senile.
He did decree a couple of cool things during his time. My favourite one of which is he renamed the town of Caesarius to Justinopolis.
Sounds like a lesser known Justin Bieber album.
Yeah, Justinopolis, that's so good. But we're not talking about him. Great dude. You know, went from listening pigs to ruling the world.
Yep.
But we're talking about his death and the dynasty that he left behind.
Okay.
He died in August 527, and his nephew was appointed. Justinian took over.
Oh. Mm.
So he'd already been the acting patrician and commander of the Imperial Guard. And importantly, he was extremely favored by Justin himself, who previously in 525, he passed a law to help his nephew out.
Mm-hmm.
So his nephew had fallen in love with a common woman.
Uh-oh.
Of lesser rank, which was illegal to marry.
Yep.
But Justin, at the time of 525, made a decree saying you were able to marry below your station.
Oh, just, okay, I'm going to say just so many times. Was that law just for Justinian or
was
it for
everybody?
Everyone? Okay.
But he was able to benefit. So he was able to marry his love, which is Theodora from lower class. Can you guess what profession of the lower classes Theodora was?
Oh, no.
Well, there's really only one profession of the lower classes for women.
Mime. She was a mime.
Oh, good. That is exactly what I was thinking.
She was not a mime.
She was a mime. She was a retired.
Does that mean a different thing?
No. Theater performer, mime. I'm miming for the listeners right now.
Yes,
you can't tell, but
there's an invisible
wall.
He is trapped in a glass box. Are you okay?
I'm fine. Let me pull myself with this rope.
I didn't know that mimes existed before 1920s France.
Yeah, no, and now, of course, the pinnacle of society.
Yes. Yeah.
So they're really
the elite, the ruling
talk about
classes.
Rags to riches. You know, mime of the day to mime now. But Justinian was in charge now. He wanted to restore the Empire of Byzantine. You know, quell these bloody Ostrogoths. And it was actually quite successful. The Ostrogoths fell, the Vandals fell, the Western Roman Empire fell, the Iberian Peninsula became under his control, and revenue was up over 1 million soldi per year. I tried to work out the math.
Okay.
I think, okay. It's about £2 billion per year increased revenue.
My God.
Which is, today's money. But that's like...
That's mime level money.
I could use a few soldi of my own.
He was extremely pernicious, tenacious, voracious, and salacious, and was dubbed the emperor that never sleeps. Such was his emphatic and energetic approach to ruling. But apparently he was still great company. He was amiable. He was approachable. He listened to the people, and he was just a very popular guy. But this was nothing compared to the impact that he actually had on law, culture, religion, and importantly, tax reform.
Yay! Wait, sorry, this is Justinian. This
Justinian,
is the nephew.
Yeah,
okay,
Justinian, yeah, Justinian. His tax process apparently was extremely efficient, and so he was able to extract wealth from taxes very, very easily and very well. And this funded the blooming empire. And during his reign, we see a lot of the beautiful creations of the Byzantine Empire. Everything's covered in gold leaf. There's mosaics, stained glass, pottery, mime.
He enshrined mime as the national art form.
He really did. Yeah. And the laws that he did enshrine in various scripts, like the Corpus Juris Civilis, the Codex Justinarius, the Pentecatia,
sure,
and the other one that I'm not going to try.
Keep plowing through.
Yeah. They're rich sources, not just of legal text, where some of our terms that we still use today, like jurisprudence, comes from, but also it's an insight into the time itself. It formed the basis of the Byzantine law, and probably where we get the nomenclature of being like Byzantine, as in like complex,
complicated, yeah.
Because there's laws for everything, and this is prior, it was just the ruler would make something up, that feels unjust, let's do it. Whereas there was like explicitly called out pieces of law, and that's probably where it comes from. He had some pretty progressive views, and which included the protection of women. So yeah, which was like enshrined in law. Yeah, so they could protect their dowry if an engagement was cancelled.
Okay.
He protected children born out of wedlock or those whose parents remarried from being disinherited. He protected women from being forced into like slavery or prostitution, etc.
You
know, like
it.
He's actually quite he's good guy. Love his gold leaf as well. Great gold leaf.
Mosaics,
great. He did, however, nearly lose his throne during some riots that were spurred by a cabal of disgruntled businessmen, probably for tax-related extraction.
They preferred what haven't disgruntled businessmen ruined in history?
But he survived this and continued his rule. He was struck with a bit of plague, but got better. And then his wife, Theodora, tragically dies at a relatively young age. And then Justinian outlived her by nearly 20 years, but he never married. And he became more devoted and more pious. And
did she mime bungee jumping?
That's exactly what happened.
I'm sailing.
Well, you know what they say, once you go mime, you'll never be fine.
What do they say? Oh, God.
Yep, that's what they say.
He died in 565. He left no heirs, but was succeeded by his nephew, just like he succeeded his uncle.
Mm.
And he was entombed in a mausoleum in the Church of the Holy Apostles and later canonized in the Orthodox Church as a saint.
Cool.
And his tombs and riches, were there for years, but were pillaged during a crusade in the 1200s.
Yeah.
So not much of him actually survives in no central place. But that's Justinian. He's a great guy, did a lot of cool things.
Yeah.
Lots of history. So to point number two, I hope you realize that it's a good thing to listen to history.
Yeah.
And shame on you if you don't.
Shame on you if you don't. You're in the wrong
place. Keep your businessmen gruntled.
Yeah, gruntle them.
Gruntle your businessmen. Listen to your pigs.
Cool. Well, that is 527 BCE.
Will in the edit, as we've established, 2/3 of the episode is on 527 BCE and 1/3 is on 1,053 years later for no reason other than our complete incompetence. Thanks for joining us. That's everything you'd ever need to know about 527 BCE.
Mm.
Yeah, a good year, I think. We were nervous about it.
I was nervous, but it was the best BCE year, I feel.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Out of the 1,000 that we're going to do.
And we have one humble request for you this week, which is tell a friend.
Yeah.
If you like the show, tell a friend.
Yeah.
Already told a friend, in which case just tell a different friend. Don't tell the same friend again.
Unless they haven't listened themselves.
Yes, unless they need reminding.
In which case, why are you friends with them?
Got two jobs.
Yeah.
Tell that friend, oi, mate, listen, I told you once, there won't be a third time.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have one call to action this week, and that's threaten your friend.
Threaten your friend to listen. Good.
Great. Well, then all that's left to do is pick our next year.
Yeah. And as a reminder, we've set the random number generator to choose a year between 1000 BCE and 2000 CE.
Oi, mate, pick a year.
Don't do that. Don't speak so harshly to the random number generator.
That is, oh, God.
It's going to choose 999 BCE now.
And our next year is 1795.
Okay.
Yep.
Things happened that year. I know it.
Lots of things.
I can tell for sure.
I think things were happening all around the world that year.
American things happened.
African things happened.
Yep. South American things.
Asian things.
Penguins.
Antarctic is rife with happenings, I'm sure.
Tinctures
ahoy.
I'm looking forward to 1795. That is our first 18th century year.
No, is that right?
It is, except for the lost episode of 1789.
Which is our pilot, which you may get access to as a patron.
If you join us on Patreon.
On Patreon.
But yeah, that's the first 18th century year for the regular podcast.
This is exciting. All right, see you next time.
Toodaloo.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.